Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? March, they never change anything.
Be no more sleeping under bridges for some homeless folks in Muncie.
They're now eligible to apply to live in tiny houses that are under construction right now by a Muncie group called Bridges Community Services. This miniature housing initiative is the first of its kind in the state of Indiana. RTV6's Derek Thomas reports.
The tiny homes began arriving this morning. It will take about a month for the construction work to be completed on them.
By midday, the truck was still unloading the 6 96-square-foot homes and placing them on their foundations. Each home will cost about $3,000.
I would love to be one of the ones flying. I think it would be amazing to live in this right here.
Brandon May has been homeless and unemployed for about 5 months. Later this week, he will get a new job at a factory. He says these humble quarters can help him get back on his feet.
When you first walk in, when you're accustomed to a big house, stuff like that, you might think no, but when you think about the layout and you think about sleeping on a park bench or sleeping underneath a bridge or anything like sleeping in someone's car, this is way more than enough room.
The tiny homes will have electricity and heat, but a separate community building will be constructed where this basketball court is that will contain bathroom and shower facilities on one side and a kitchen facility on the other. None of the homeless selected to live here will be hardened criminals.
Everyone is vetted, which means basically we do police checks on everyone that comes in. We will not serve any violent offenders, and we will not serve any lifetime sex registry people.
Some neighborhood residents think it is a positive development.
when I seen it, I think it said on Facebook, and I thought, wow, that is a really good idea. Why didn't somebody think of that sooner?
And you think they're doing a community service?
Oh, yeah.
They expect 50 to 100 applications to live in these homes. They began accepting those applications October 1st. Move-in is set for November 1st. In Muncie, Derek Thomas, RTV6.
The entire Tiny Homes project will cost about $80,000. Staffers will be on the property 24 hours a day to make sure all goes well. Residents of the homes could pay up to $50 a month for utilities.
Welcome back, y'all, to the Real Elon. I'm doing this video because I think it's important when it comes to history. I think it's important that people are credited for what they did. And I don't like to see other people put in the forefront and the public is made to believe that, you know, certain people created something or came about something beforehand and not acknowledging the real person who created something first. See, a lot of people believe Madam C.J. Walker, you know, was the first. For example, they try to say she was the first black female millionaire. Incorrect. They try to say she was the first one to bring about the, you know, the hair care for black people. Oh, FYI, I know the fuck black is not the correct term, but shit, okay? Anyway. But that's not true. So this is why I'm doing this video. So after my intro, then you're going to further look at a mini documentary about Annie Turnbow. Annie is the pioneer of the black hair care industry from back in the early 1900s. Has been quietly kept. Why? I don't know. I can look more into Madam C.J. Walker because I really would love to know why is it Madam C.J. Walker was put in the forefront as if she created all this, and she did. Now, mind you, I'm not taking away anything from Madam C.J. Walker because she did a lot as well. But I still believe in credit needs to be given where it's due. And this is with a lot of people. So many of us have learned about the great inventor, businesswoman, and pioneer, Madam C.J. Walker. We were taught many wonderful and honorable things about her, and she has earned much respect for her contributions to business, science, and vocational opportunities, as well as her economic and cultural contributions to her community and the legacy of her ancestors. Again, like I said, not taking nothing away from her because she did a hell of a lot. But quiet is kept. Madam C.J. Walker had a mentor and a teacher. Exactly, because I hope you do know people got to learn from somebody, right? She had a mentor and a teacher who remain obscure and lost in history for most of us until today. Annie Minerva Turnbow Pope Malone was born August 9, 1869. Passed away May 10th, 1957. Annie began developing safer and more effective hair care methods and treatments for women of color in the 1890s. In 1917, Annie Malone founded the first Portal College in St. Louis, Missouri. By the 1920s, she had built a financial empire valued at over $15 million, and this included dozens of Portal colleges where she empowered people with personal development and training in the business of black cosmetology, manufacturing, and public etiquette. She established over 100 beauty salons and supply stores nationwide, built manufacturing and distribution centers, and employed more than 10,000 door-to-door agents worldwide. Yes, worldwide, not just in this country, but worldwide. Madam C.J. Walker was one of those portal agents. Yes, Madam C.J. Walker worked for Annie Malone. Annie Malone mentored Madam C.J. Walker. Annie Malone taught Madam C.J. Walker what she knew about when it comes to the hair care. Okay? And, of course, Madam C.J. Walker went on to build on Miss Annie's shoulders. A beauty industry pioneer, Annie Malone, the social activist, donated vast amounts of wealth to social and educational institutions. Among the most noted was her $25,000 donation to Howard University, because at that time, it was the largest gift ever donated to a historically black institution.
Hey, okay, time for another installment of It's My House. And hopefully we can draw some inspiration and examples from Annie Malone, who was, as you just heard, the mentor of Madam C.J. Walker. Matter of fact, as you heard the lady say, Annie Malone had at least 100 beauty schools. A woman named Sarah Breedlove attended one of those beauty schools. She excelled at, you know, the teaching she got there. And then she came up with her own brand name, which she went from Sarah Breedlove to Madam C.J. Walker. In any event, today's podcast is titled Financial Resources versus Cash. Now, the common denominator with let's see, Madam C.J. Walker and Annie Malone. Let's go to Annie Malone. Let's look her up a little bit, because a lot of times, you know, we want to do something, and we got a great idea, but we think we need some cash to do it. Well, let's take a look at that. That's why today's podcast is titled Financial Resources versus Cash. Okay, Annie Malone. Let's look her up. Let's get her humble beginnings. Annie Malone, let's see, African-American businesswoman, inventor, philanthropist. She was one of the first African-American women to become a millionaire in the first three decades of the 20th century. She founded and developed a large primary commercial and educational enterprise centered on cosmetics for African-American women. Annie Minerva Turnbull was born in Southern Illinois, the daughter of an enslaved African-Americans, Robert and Isabella Cook Turnbull. So her parents were born slaves. Now, she was born in 1877. So she was born free. All right. When her father went off to fight for the Union Army in the first Kentucky Cavalry of the Civil War, Isabella took the couple's children. All right. She was the 10th of 11 children. She was born on a farm near Metropolis, Illinois, in Massac County, Illinois. Orphan at a young age, she attended public school. Okay, anyway. All right. Now, let's get into some brainstorming here with, instead of thinking you need cash, think in terms of what kind of resources or financial resources do you have available to make ends meet. All right, I'm gonna open up. Robin, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Now, I figure you're probably the. Now, anybody can chime in on this. We're looking for ways because money has different forms. So a lot of people, they're thinking about cash. You know, they don't have cash in hand, cash in the house, cash in the bank account or savings account or on a credit card. You know, they can't operate. But there are other financial resources. So we're going to throw out various. And I guess it depends on what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do. Now, let's see. As I'm taking out my notes here, since most people think of cash, let's go to, let me see. You guys hear me bumping? That's me. Matter of fact. Okay, we have the obvious suspects of OPM, other people's money. So, if you don't have a dollar, if I don't have a dollar, maybe Robin's got a dollar, and that might solve the problem. But let's take that out of the equation. Okay. We have other people's experience.
Other people's assets.
Other people's experience. Oh, wait a minute. OP. Hey, well, hold it, because I can only type so far. all right, other people's experience. Okay. Let's see. All right, now, other people's assets.
Yes.
OPA.
Yes.
All right, that's and you know what? That is the basis of Uber.
Yes.
And Airbnb.
And Amazon.
And Amazon.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go. Matter of fact, let me make a mental note of that. Uber, Amazon, and Airbnb.
Yep.
All right, now, well, okay, well, let's, and right below that, I'm going to put other people's, as close to other people's assets, other people's resources. That's close to assets
yes.
as well.
Yes. Other people's time, assets, services.
Oh, wait a minute. Time, services.
Yes.
I'm going to put in there space.
Yes.
Talent.
Yep.
So, all right, now.
So these So these are things, these are great and lucrative sources, and nobody even has to really give up any money. You just utilize what and be willing to utilize and share what you have with other people in order that, you know, we can all generate some wealth, if that makes
okay,
sense.
Okay, well, let's go with a project we're working on. Okay, we want to, because if we can figure out for what we can do for one, we can do it as many. We can just replicate that. Okay, matter of fact, are you familiar with the book One Red Paper Clip?
No, so I'll have to read it. Nope.
Well, let me give you a quick, I wonder if I got in the audio here. One Red Paper Clip is about how a guy took one red paper clip and bartered it until he got a house. Let me see if I got it. And it's a true story documented. They've got YouTube videos on it, and he's got a book on it as well. Yeah, he started with let me see if I have it in my audio. I know I have it on my phone. One red. Okay. Well, let me go to Wikipedia. Oh, they even have a Wikipedia page on it. Let's see. One red paper clip. Let's see. All right, I'm on Wikipedia. One Red Paper Clip. One Red Paper Clip is a website created by Canadian blogger Kyle MacDonald, who bartered his way from a single red paper clip to a house in a series of 14 online trades over the course of a year. MacDonald's was inspired by the childhood game Bigger Better. His site received considerable amount of notice for tracking the transactions. A lot of people have been asking how I've stirred up so much publicity around the project, and the simple answer is I have no idea. Okay. And here's the timeline. Yeah. MacDonald made his first trade of a red paper clip on a fish-shaped pen on July 14th, 2005. He reached his goal of trading up to a house within 14 transactions, trading a movie role for a house. This is the list of transactions that MacDonald made. First transaction, on July 14th, 2005, he went to Vancouver, Canada, and traded the paper clip, the one red paper clip, for a fish-shaped pen. The second trade, he then traded the pen the same day for a hand-sculptured doorknob from Seattle, Washington. Third trade, on July 25th, 2005, he traveled to Amherst, Massachusetts with a friend to trade the doorknob for a Coleman Camp stove with fuel. You can buy those all day long on, Amazon.
Yeah.
Fourth trade, on September 24th, 2005, he traveled to California and traded the camp stove for a Honda generator. I got one on eBay right now. I got a generator on Craigslist right now. On November 16th, 2005, he traveled to Massapequa, Queens, and traded the generator for an instant party, an empty keg, and an IOU for filling the keg with beer on a bearer's choice, and Leon Budweiser signed. This was the second attempt to make the trade. He was with the first result in the generator being temporarily confiscated by the New York City Fire Department. Anyway, on trade 6, December 8th, he traded his instant party to Quebec comedian and radio personality Michael Barrett for a Ski-Doo snowmobile. On the 7th trade, within 1 week of that, he traded the snowmobile for a two-person trip to Yak, British Columbia, scheduled for February 2006. On the 8th trade, on or about January 7, 2006, he traded the second spot on the Yank trip for a box truck. And he's going up the ladder. See, then he went on the 9th trade, he traded the box truck for a recording contract with Metalworks in Mississauga, Ontario, excuse me. The 10th trade on April 11, 2006, he traded the contract to Jody Grant for a year's rent in Phoenix, Arizona. Boy, that's a good trade. On 11th of April 2006, he traded the year's rent in Phoenix for one afternoon with musician Alice Cooper. On the 12th trade, on or about May 26, 2006, he traded the afternoon with Alice Cooper with for a Kiss motorized snow globe. On the 13th, he traded on June 22, 2006, he traded the snow globe to Corbin Burnson, the actor, for a role in the film Donna on Demand. On the 14th trade, which was the final trade, on or about July 5th, 2006, he traded the movie role for a two-story farmhouse in Kipling, Saskatchewan, Canada. And there's a picture of it online.
Wow.
From red paperclip.
Yep. So,
now, with that I'm listening.
I was just going to say that red paperclip, somebody else might have looked at that as junk and actually thrown it away. And so this is why I always encourage waste utilization. Yeah,
right.
That's all. Go ahead.
Right. Well,
somebody else might have thrown that red paper clip away.
let's do it with, because he did that in the course of a year. So let's say somebody they don't have to be homeless, but they want to live in their own tiny house. But they don't have any money. But what they do have is plenty of time. All right. And time is an asset. Time is an asset. So the first thing they do is, you know what, well, I need a set of plans. So they go to the library, which is free, and they read through some books, and they found some plans. And the library does have, they allow you to have, let's say, 5 copies for free. I'm just saying. Most of them charge. But this particular library is free. So he makes copies of Well, he makes 5 copies of those plans. So he's got a set of plans for free. Now, in the set of plans, they tell you specifically what tools you need and what materials you need. He doesn't have any tools. He doesn't have any materials. He doesn't have any tools. I mean, to get the tools or materials. So let's say the first thing he needs, or you can get them in any particular order. You know what? And he doesn't even have a place to build. So what would be your first step? You got the plans. You know what materials and tools are needed, but you don't have any money, and you need a place to build. What would be your first step? Well, it's real silent here. Rob, you there?
Sorry about that. I was muted. Well, one of my first steps would be just, like I said, it doesn't always take money. People don't always have money, but people need to consider each other as currency. Uh-huh. Yep. And also opportunity. So I don't know, the first thing I would do would just be, I guess, collecting the people. And I think one of the first things you're going to have to do is really change people's mindsets, because people, they'll look and they'll say, if they don't have money in their pocket, they'll look and they'll feel and think, I don't have anything, so I can't do anything. And then they're just stuck, that they can't do anything.
All right, but the question I'm asking you is, all right, let me rephrase the question. Okay, let's say you need a place to build. You got the plans.
Yes.
Okay, but you don't have a place to build. So let's say the first thing you decide to do is you need to get a place to build. What would you do to find a place to build?
To find a place to build, I would look out at people that I know that have land, you know, and partner with them or ask them. And sometimes there are grants or programs for low-income people or disadvantaged people that you can come up with property and land at too. Auctions, I don't know if that's viable. Or listening to some of these examples, see if you can trade your time or experience for land. You know, I don't know if you could.
Okay, well,
let's
go with the first one you said. You would, you know, see among the people that you already knew.
Yeah.
If they had some space available for you to build. So let's say out of your circle of friends, one of them said, yes, you can build it in my backyard. And it's a deal where, if you help them out, you know, with this, that, or the other around the house running errands, you can keep it there as long as you wish. Okay, so you found the place. All right, so let's check that off the list. Now, and it you use social capital to get that. All right, now, second thing is, now you have a list of materials. You have no money. And you have no cash. Excuse me. Your social capital is money. All right, social capital is money. All right, so you have no cash or no credit cards. or nothing like that. So next thing is you have to get material, and let's say the material, let's go, because we're going from the ground up. You need you got to build it on something. If you build it on skids, okay. All right, you got a choice. You can build it on skids, which in this example, it would be, according to these plans, it'll be three strips of wood on the bottom of the cabin where it can sit on the ground. But you don't want it sitting on the ground that long because of moisture. So where would you, all right, let's just make this general. Wood. You need 2x4s. You need plywood. You need OSB wood. Where would you go to get the wood? Or who would you go to get the wood? Where would you go to get the wood? Or who would you go to who might have a wood?
Places in the community where they're building, I would go and see if I could get their scrap and see if I can partner with their supplier even for the scraps. You know how when they saw off wood, they always throw off that the off pieces. You could take and combine them, you know, and reuse them. Housing for habitat. If you have partnership, if you have friends, if you know friends that are business owners, maybe you could go and ask them to help support you by outright, hey, give me a couple of $100 and buy me this wood that I need, you know.
Ah, very good idea. You can go to another friend or friend and say, look, I'm trying to do this. You don't have to give me any cash.
Yeah.
You can't. They might have an account at Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever, or Menards. They might have an account, and they might be able to charge for the building materials. And then the building materials are delivered from that particular outlet to the site. Right. Excellent idea.
And because they are making a some sort of donation like that, they can get a tax benefit or credit possibly as well. So
right, in kind donation.
You know,
so you can do it. Well, now that's the second thing. Now, so you can also to get the materials, and let's say all the materials on the list. All right, and let's say those materials. Based on the audio we play on here all the time with the solar cabin, he built the cabin for $2,000, and then the solar part, the solar electric part, was $3,000. So let's just deal with materials right now. So let's say you were able to get whoever you went to, you were able to get all, or maybe you went to two or three or four people. But out of those two to four people, they either, like, let's say two people had accounts at these retail box stores. So they were able to call up or go with you, charge some materials based on a list. You didn't get not a penny. The month they charged it, and then it's, so you got everything you need is going to be delivered to the job site. And then the other two people, they had the balance of the materials that you needed, and they gave it, you know, like it could be an in-kind donation. I'll give you 10 sheets of drywall in exchange for you cutting the grass or doing the laundry or what have you. Okay.
Yeah.
So social capital was used as money to get the locate the land to build on. The next form of cash was somebody's charge account or store account.
Yes.
The next form of money, instead of using cash, was an in-kind donation. People already had the stuff. Now, let's go with tools. Because you done got all materials, but now you need tools. All right?
Yes.
Now, let me throw out a couple of ideas here. Some public libraries have tools for rent to people who have a library card at that particular library. I don't know if they have a deposit with it. I've never done it. I've just heard about it. So your local public library might have tools that you can rent.
Go to the local, what are the trade cards?
Hardware store. Well,
right. You go to the local.
That's another.
The local.
You can go to one of these vocational schools.
The students and the vocational schools, and then you get it in a class project, and then you don't have to lease or rent the tools. They'll let you use them as part of that project.
Right. Right.
Something to think about.
That's true.
Something to think about.
That's true. Something to think about. That is something to think about.
Or
if you have to put out some cash, you can hire some of those kids at a discounted price. All right?
Yes.
Now, okay, and then you've got everything you need, and then with those kids at the school and their teacher as a supervisor, you basically have everything you need to build that structure. Now, let's do another scenario with this. You got the plans, okay? You have the land, but let's go back to the person who had the charge card, the charge account at Menards, Lowe's, or Home Depot. Okay. And let's say they put out between two people, they did $1,000 each. Now, how are we going to pay those people back? Because the agreement is between those two. Okay. Although you're not putting out, but they see what you're using the project for. But how can you generate the funds to pay them back? Because they're going to have to pay back their charge counts every month.
Yes. So, again, there's got to be some skill sets or some assets that we can pull from to generate that income. Let me just think.
Let me throw out another clue here. Let me throw out another clue.
Because the way
you had enough material. Had enough material. You had enough material to build a 400 square foot tiny house.
Okay.
Here's an idea. Instead of building one tiny house at 400 square feet, why don't you build two at 200 square feet?
Yeah.
Live in one, rent out the other one. Have the one you're not living in pay back the guys who had the charge account.
Yes. Yes. And or you can build a tiny
build
home.
Three.
in kind for free for this person on their land.
Right.
Uh-huh. Or some other activity that will benefit or behoove that person, the benefactor.
Well, you know what? That's a good idea.
Because
you build three.
Because the exchange
you live in one.
Always have to be, uh-huh, yes.
Right. You live in one. You use one to pay back
the benefactor.
The benefactor for the benefactor.
With the charge, uh-huh.
And then the other one could be used, well, basically it's only limited to your imagination.
Yeah. You know, you could put a service in there. You could put a business in there. You know.
Matter of fact, you know what? That might be a good strategy is get more material than you actually need to build that one structure.
Uh-huh.
And instead of building one place, you build
two.
Three, what, two to three more.
Two to three, yeah. Yeah.
Build two to three more.
And that way you got a
cash flow coming in every month.
Yes. Yeah, which is...
Or you can do the short-term rental thing like Airbnb and get it every week.
Yeah, you can do a combination of...
Right.
You know, I would have a listing for both. And I would put a service in there. I would find something that there's a need for or a niche and go get me some a runaway teen or a teen mother and sit them in there in front of a computer and give them a job as well. You know, so there's all kind of things.
Well,
you
that's
do
true because you're going to need
space.
Some help. You're going to need somebody that can track down. This is only limited to people's imagination. You can have somebody that needs a place to stay, and in exchange,
uh-huh.
Let's say you built three places. You live in one. You got another one, which is just straight rental. The third one, you find somebody that needs a place to stay, and they need some type of income. So what you do is you give them a job, and they use part of their money to pay you rent. But also their job with you is, maybe they have to go out and see what internet connection that's in their cabin is that what they do, they're 4 hours a day or 8 hours a day or whatever it might be, is they're looking for materials, free materials or discounted materials that are available for pickup.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, because we're always going to have to be doing some sort of outreach and, I guess, forereach before. We have to always be
looking for materials. And then you're going to need somebody to pick it up as well. Because once you locate the materials, you're going to have to go pick it up. And that could end up being a full-fledged business.
That's a full-fledged business right there. Yep. We can move people and things.
Right. People, when you got a cash situation where you're short on cash or don't have any cash at all, don't get discouraged or lose hope.
Yeah.
Because then you have to look at what kind of financial resources do you have access to. You don't have to own them, but you have access room to. It could be a room, an empty room in your house. Could be an empty room in your house. It could be an empty space in your backyard. That empty space in your backyard could be used to pitch a tent or build a guest house. Bring in some income.
Yeah.
If you don't own land, you know, do you know somebody who owns land? Doesn't have to be an acre or nothing big like that. It could be a regular old size backyard where, and you're like, where I live at, my neck of the woods, everybody around here, not everybody, but a lot of people around here, because we all have like fences you can't even barely see above. A lot of people around in my neck of the woods, they have guest houses. Some people call them mother-in-law cottages. This is way before the tiny house movement put the term tiny house. So around here, and then in other places, according to the planning department, they're called a zoning or planning person, and the government might call them accessory buildings, you know. And they might have something on the books. In other places, you can just do it. You know, build whatever you want to build. Check with the local.
They're called cottage homes in Seattle city limits.
So,
they're called cottage homes. While
right,
tiny
so
they, homes
there might
are
be
still
a place.
Prohibited.
Yeah. Right, exactly. That's a whole nother podcast on that. But it's accessory buildings, whatever they call them in your neck of the woods. Call them what they call them in your neck of the woods. So you might have an empty space in your backyard that can be pulling in $500 to $1,000 a month. Now you got to build on it. You know, but what, you know, what's a weekend or two? Okay, today's Monday.
Well,
this is a project that can be completed by this coming weekend. If you're in need, if you got a bill that's due next Monday, okay, and you happen to have a couple of spare dollars, you can do it. Or, you know, you can sit down and think about what financial resources. Stop thinking in terms strictly of cash money or even credit cards. What kind of financial resources? It could be other people, other people's resources, other people's talent, other people's time, other people's expertise. Like I said, you could have a spare room.
Other people's charge accounts.
Other people's charge accounts. Other people's imagination.
Yes, because speaking of imagination, someone maybe can donate an old van or a truck or a bus or a trailer that can be converted into a home as well. So, you know, everything, you'd be surprised. I'm glad that you used that example of exchanging.
Now, here's an idea that you gave me last week. Now, I got a side of a duplex is empty right now. I got to get rid of it, rent it out like yesterday. But we want to do the room thing first instead of just rent out the whole house. Just rent out by the rooms. So an excellent idea you gave me last week because I don't have it in the budget to, you know, because I want to rent out to a particular niche market, and they like furnished rooms, so I don't have my budget to. So the idea that you gave me, because right next door is a duplex building, There's a there's an empty bedroom that's already fully furnished. Nobody's in that guest room. So basically tell my cousin, look, can you take the stuff out of one bedroom in your side of the building, move it over to the other
building, there.
Take pictures so we can have pictures, stage it, then move it back over, and then when we get start getting calls, then go ahead on out and rent some stuff, or not even, maybe rent it, but people get all settled in now. We got to work out that with a little, well, we could rent it, but I don't want to rent it. I just rather go ahead to a thrift store. You know what? I got the idea.
I would leave that
another person say, could you give me a loan? Give me a well, hold it. I want to give you an idea. What were you about to say?
You could leave that room staged long enough through the first rental or two, and then you have the money to buy the rest of the furniture.
Excellent
idea. You can move that furniture
rent
back.
Rent the furniture, leave it. You know what? Leave that furniture in that room.
Move the
pay
furniture
the cousin
over
a couple
there.
Of dollars. You know what? Rent the furniture from the cousin.
Rent the
Let
furniture from the cousin
there.
And leave it there long enough for a rental or two, enough for you to generate some funds, and then you can
for the other two,
pay her off, and then furnish the other two.
The
and
other
you don't
two
have
rooms.
To rent anything. You don't have
right.
to rent anything. Okay?
Excellent idea.
Yeah.
And that's what we mean by
zero down
financial
the millionaire concept.
Right.
Yes. And you have
excellent.
To look at people, their time and their effort and the opportunity as a resource as well. They just think of people as money. Because we just made, I don't know, however several thousands of dollars, we just made a big money move, and we haven't spent a dime. We haven't exchanged a dime. So, you know, you
right,
haven't
right.
really, you really want to open your mind and just think of people as money. Uh-huh. And don't think that...
And the people really are money.
Yeah, and don't look at that the fact that the person is homeless or whatever. Every person, every single individual, human, has a great, infinite social capital that's not based on money. So we have to move past that and put more value on the people, especially as currency. So, yeah, I hope
true.
That helps.
No, it does. It helps a whole lot. It helps a whole lot. I mean, the if we put a dollar value on that stuff on the cabin part,
yeah.
Let's say we spent $2,000, but then we multiplied it because we ended up building, let's say, three cabins.
Yep.
So, let's say we sold those two cabins, or even sold one of them.
Yes. Yes.
So let's say we sold. Let's say we sold those. Matter of fact, I got an audio on here. Wait a minute. Yeah, let's put dollar values to this. Where is I opened up the program with it. Let me see. Doggone it. I just had it. Where is it? Just had it. All right, here it is. Pay close attention to this audio.
Be no more sleeping under bridges for some homeless folks in Muncie.
They're now eligible to apply to live in tiny houses that are under construction right now by a Muncie group called Bridges Community Services. And this miniature housing initiative is the first of its kind in the state of Indiana. RTV6's Derek Thomas reports.
The tiny homes began arriving this morning. It would take about a month for the construction work to be completed on them.
By midday, the truck was still unloading the 6 96-square-foot homes and placing them on their foundations. Each home will cost about $3,000.
I would love to be one of those.
Okay. Now, remember, we have materials for 400 square feet. You just heard on this audio, these tiny houses were 96 square feet, a bit under 100 square feet. All right, so we said instead of building one at 400 square feet, we'll build three, let's say at 96 square feet, or let's just round it off, 100 square feet, and we still got material left over. Actually, you know, let's just eke it out. We'll build four at 400 square feet. Now,
yeah.
You also heard the guy say, Robin, how much are we each one of those
$3,000.
Houses worth?
Oh, oh.
You spent $2,000.
I'm not sure about how much you worth, but I heard him say they cost $3,000 to make.
No, that's what their price is. The retail
okay.
price.
Okay.
So you're taking, you took two, well, you know, let me go to one more. Because this is the way we're going to have to start thinking. All right, I'm going to play close attention to this next audio, and then we're going to, particularly for the cost, we're listening for the cost, and then we're going to come back to the one we just heard about, what they did in Muncie, Indiana, because each one of those, $3,000. Now, this cabin right here, the solar cabin, I think, is 400 square feet, but listen to how much he spent. Excluding the solar part.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land, go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions. And that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills. And then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need.
Okay. So, numbers we were looking for. $2,000, now we're not talking about the solar part, but $2,000 in material to actually build the cabin. All right. The cabin is 14 by 14. That's 196 square feet. So let's take 114 times 14, and let's divide that by 3. So there's enough materials there to build 3 65-square-foot cabins. Build three, sell two. Sell the two for what these people were selling them for, like in Indiana. They sold them for $3,000 each. Or you can sell them for higher than that, but let's say $3,000 each. So you've got, you spent two, but you've made four. That's another strategy, just saying. Not the only strategy, but it is a strategy. So
yeah.
You got one place to live in. You built three. You sold two. You got $4,000 in cash. And out of the $4,000, you pay back the original two that came through somebody else's credit card or resources or what have you. So now you've got $2,000 in your pocket. But now this time you can go and do the same thing. Buy $2,000 worth of material, and this time you don't have to buy from not a borrow or get social capital or access anybody else. That's your $2,000, and you do the same thing. You build three 65-foot square feet cabins. You already got your place to live in. Now you got three more cabins. You sell them for $3,000 each. And then you hold on. Well, I did my math wrong on the first one. The other two costs, you sold them for, so I said 6,000. It was 6,000 minus two. You got 4,000. Excuse me. So you got 4,000. You take two, keep two in your bank account, all right, cash reserve, and then you take 2,000, you build three more, you sell those three for 3,000 each, now you got $9,000. Now you take, let's see, out of that $9,000, take two. So you can build three more cabins, and then what's that left? Nine minus two, seven. Put $7,000 on top of the how much we got in the bank so far. Well, we got 4,000 or hey, we got 4,000.
Yes.
So now we're up to what, 11,000?
Yep.
7-11. So you got $11,000 bank account, and you know what? That's why I like brainstorming with you. You act creative imagination. So you're not operating on anybody else's cash at this point. You just use that. You needed some outside resources to get started. And a lot of people are saying, you know what, well, who's going to live in a 65-square-foot cabin? There are plenty of people. They can be used as a man cave. It can be used as a backyard studio, transitional housing.
Is people who look at their circumstances and they realize and understand that they cannot go on in the way that they can. Plenty of people will be ecstatic for the opportunity to live mortgage-free and debt-free. And then they'll probably be relieved that they don't have all that space that's just housing basically a lot of stuff. I heard you
well,
say
yeah,
the other
bigger
day,
the space,
how you
yeah, the bigger the space, the more maintenance.
That, yeah, you know, and the more stuff that you have to occupy that space that you can't even, you can only, your butt can only sit on one chair or one couch at a time. You can only be in one room, at, you know what I'm saying, at a time.
Right.
And so, and really, why, who is it that says that we have to have a separate room for each activity? Our function, except for the bathroom.
Right.
You know, who says? So,
Yeah, I'm sorry. Don't let me get started.
No, you're right, though. let's see. Let's say a person, I'm trying to figure out something. How much space is in a car?
Goodness, probably like 30 cubic feet, something like that. If you think about sitting in the back seat and either leaning back or extending your legs out, and then up around your body over that with the seat between you. So and they work that little space, man. They can seat six in that little space if they wanted to.
How much space?
I don't know. Can you Google it? What's the average space inside the car? Does anyone know?
I'm trying to look it up online right now. All right, on the exterior, the average car takes up about 300 square feet of asphalt.
Uh-huh.
And that's the exterior, how much space in the car? Let me see, interior, that's what I want to know. Which compact cars have the most interior let's see. Well, you were getting in the right track. A Volkswagen has a passenger volume of 94 cubic feet.
Okay.
A cargo van.
Probably like
cargo van 30 to 60 to 66 cubic feet.
Ooh. See? And you can work those spaces with shelving on the side, and you can even put a ledge like they do in the U-Haul. Up in the front of it.
In a square foot. All right, let's see. Now that we had the depth and feet, so far, for example, how it works. Oh, we're going to need a math person on this one. All right. I'm at it. All right, so we're talking about a car is in cubic feet. Oh, wait a minute. I know what cubic feet. Feet. Versus square. Okay, one. Cubic feet to square feet converted. Okay. Let's say well, let's go with 100. Woo! All right, 100 square feet is 1,000 cubic feet.
Okay. Makes sense.
So,
so 1,000 square feet.
A car. All right, hold it. Rob, you got to calculate. I mean, listen, we got to figure out how many cubic feet. I think I had it on one of these things. How many cubic feet is in the interior of a car? Oh, that's right. I did come across that. But I don't want to lose my page. All right. A Volkswagen, how many cubic feet inside? I'm going to go inside a Cadillac, Eldorado. That's a big car.
Yep. And then remember those El Caminos, too, where you could put that top on the back of that bed?
All right.
That's a lot of space, too.
She was in El Dorado auto rent car. All right, Cadillac. All right. I want interior, man. Let me put in the word interior. You got to be specific.
And these are probably the older type models you're referencing. And then again, you can go to Pick and Pull and go get them, you know, just before they smash the vehicles, and they'll just give them to you. Convert into your use as materials for building.
All right, Cadillac Eldorado. Well, let me do it this way. All right. I guess I gotta look at specs.
Man, you're not making it easy.
Fourth gen, they got all these generations here. All right, let's look at the most recent, the 10th generation layout, engine, wheelbase, length, width, height. But I want the interior. You know, because if you're living in your car, if you're living in your car, your van.
Watch this. This might help. The Cadillac CTS has 13.7 cubic feet of trunk space.
We need we need what's inside that car. The interior.
Okay, I'm looking at Cadillac interior. Now the Escalade, let's see. It's giving me adjectives, but it's not giving me cubic feet. You know.
Yeah, I've got a I've got a cubic feet calculator here. If we can get the interior of cubic feet, interior and the height and the depth, we can calculate it to square feet.
Okay, so we would have specs. There we go. Hold on, let me scroll down the specs.
Yeah, I found specs for El Dorado, but it gave me all the exterior calculations.
Yeah,
you know, the length of the car, the height of the car, and all that. I need the interior where the people actually, the front seat and the back seat. That's what I need.
Then you have to, did you click on, there's a button that says click on all specs and options. So I don't know. Let me see.
Now, it looks like the way they calculate square feet is length and width. You know, 3 feet by 2 feet, cubic feet, 1 foot by 3 feet by 2 feet.
Oh my God, they just give me features, but no. Oh, wait, here we go. Okay,
you
in a whatever I said, an escalator, whatever it is, the front leg room in inches is 45.3. Cargo to volume, seat one cubic feet, is 120.9. Let me, I'm going to give you this. I'm going to copy and paste it to you so that you can.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the way square feet. Cubic feet is calculated by, you need you need feet, or you got height.
Yeah,
width,
we're just
and,
gonna. I'm gonna have you look at these specs that I found, and then hold on, where you at?
Yeah, the form. All right, I found the formula. The formula for cubic feet is width times length times height or depth. Cubic square feet.
Okay, so
it's.
I just put there you go. And that's for an Escalade. So if you look, it's got different. They don't put it in total. They break it all down. In can you see?
Yeah. Cargo. The cargo value to seat is 2 cubic feet. But she got 76.7. Cargo volume seat 100. Okay, they got a bunch of numbers.
Seats. Yeah,
leg room 45.3. All right, leg room must be, they must mean this in inches. Front head room in inches 39.7. Okay, well, this we can probably figure it out that way, but. 314,
yeah,
your mic is
open. LA, if you take a room 11 foot 6 inches and 8 foot tall, you got about a little over 1,000 square feet.
Okay. We're trying to figure out the cubic feet for the interior of a car.
Well, you got the seats in there.
Let's see. All right, the example I got here.
And what kind of car are you talking about? A car is about 4 foot across.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably
is
about 6 foot. Then it's probably got about 4'6" in height. So it's about 108 cubic feet.
108 cubic feet. And let's break. Now I'm trying to take that figure. You said 108.
Yeah, if you take the seats out. front seats since it's a two-door.
No, we're leaving them in there just as they are.
Well, you got front seats and back seats, so what do you figure? You going to have two seats?
What we're trying to do is, all right, we're trying to convert the cubic feet with leaving the seats in there as they are and figuring out, because what the example that you just gave, you know, how many square feet converted, the cubic feet equal to square feet.
I tell you what, a coffin is 24 cubic feet.
And you're stretched out in there.
Or sometimes you're sitting up with only your legs extended and your back against the thing. And so,
a big refrigerator. A big refrigerator is about 20 cubic feet, isn't it?
Well, you think about it. If a person is sleeping in their car and they recline the seat back, okay?
Yep.
And they're not rolling over to the other side because, you know, you got something in the middle of the car and all that other stuff. You might have other people. So we're talking about when a person's living in their car, they're sleeping on one side and they got their stuff in the back seat and all that. So we're talking about that's all in cubic feet. So what would that be in square feet?
In square feet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about 12 square feet. Well, if you want to take a car and convert the area at about square feet, you're probably about 12 square feet.
Okay, let's go with that figure. So you got people living in cars and vans in 10 to 12, let's say 12 square feet. Though, and a lot of those people, so they're living tiny already. That's the point I'm trying to make. They're living micro, well, not maybe micro, but they're living extremely small. So people like that, if it's something that's 60 square feet or 96 square feet, that's definitely a lot of room for those people to step up.
Well, I tell you what, I had a maxi van. That van I was telling you about, I computerized, that was a Dodge Maxi. That's okay to ride in, but I wouldn't want to live in it.
Well, yeah, most people wouldn't. Psychologically, most people wouldn't. But, because I slept in my car at one of these rest stops before. And it is not comfortable, but you know, it'll do in a pinch. So, like I say, if you go on YouTube, there's video after video after video of people. Some of them are not living in their car by choice. Many others are living in their car or van by choice to cut expenses. They're stacked, and they're working. We're not talking about homeless people. We're talking about the working houseless because their home is actually their car temporarily. And they're going to work, but they don't have to. They don't want to pay the expense of rent. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. He was telling me his son, who's got like two or three kids already. His wife is pregnant again, and their rent is $2,000 a month. Now, for me, I'm not going to live for $2,000 a month. That's too much. For me, I'd rather live in something smaller. And you don't even, there are plenty of places where you can go and find something. Matter of fact, I'm used to buying houses for like $1,000, $2,000. So just, you call me cheap, but that's me. But $2,000 a month in rent, that's crazy. But that's me, though. some other people, because I can't imagine what kind of value a person can give you for $2,000 worth of rent. I just can't. I can't justify it for my lifestyle. I don't need the swimming pool out there. I don't need the community swimming pool. So I don't need to live in a place like that. I don't need to replace with the person at the front desk and the security. I don't need all those amenities you pay for. The price goes up. So, but anyway, that's crazy LA. In any event. So anyway, I think we laid out to get some people thinking in a different direction. Think in terms of financial resources when you're short on cash. That's the whole thing I was trying to put through on this particular podcast. Because a lot of people have a lot of financial resources, but they don't realize they have it. So, just like the guy was talking about in the audio, he didn't buy new doors or windows. He went to some place where they were, and there's always somebody tossing out doors and windows. If you go to free cycling your city, you can get a lot of stuff free. You just got to go pick it up. Look out for auctions. I know a friend of mine in Ohio. She bought a whole barn for like $200 in an auction. And she didn't buy the barn for the barn's sake, but she was looking to basically break that down for the parts. You know, she got a lot of wood out of it and some other things. So there's a lot out there. That's the point I'd like to make. So read the book, One Red Paperclip. It shows you how you can use your imagination. And Robin, any closing thoughts? I don't think Robin's there. All right, on that note. Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Robin, for your brain power. Thank you, Pianchi, as well. Thank you, all listeners. On that note, everyone have a good day.